with something we were saying earlier, that as something matures, you need to be aware of what may be coming down the road.
Right.
And maybe a number of times people thought there was no tomorrow in terms of what the future was going to hold.
Well, those are three very different business problems, and our response was quite different in each case. The Diage of business, for whatever reason, we had simply not stayed competitive and made the investments either in technology or in manufacturing facilities, and it got in trouble at about the time when we were really understanding what international competition means, namely that some countries and some companies don't play by the same business rules that we do. And we learned all about subsidies and people that don't really care about as much as we do about returns as they do about market share and things like that. And depending on how what kind of competitors you have in a given business, you can have a variety of different problems. And the dyes business really got to be not to our liking. And we certainly had not stayed abreast of the industry in some respects. So that one was really not a very difficult call. It was time to admit that the way the business was headed, it probably wasn't as important upon as it had been, and we perhaps should let it go. The chlorofluorocarbon thing was, at first, it was just hard to understand. Difficult to know whether or not these were real changes, and until we had the science, we were not in a position to make a very intelligent business decision or choice. It took quite a while for that science to to be documented, and I know there's a lot of concern about how long it took DuPont to make the decision it did to discontinue certain things and work hard on alternatives. The fact is that we made that decision 3 days after the information was available. We did not sit on our hands. Neither did we panic when we just weren't quite sure what the science was. So all during that period we'd been working on alternatives. We understood the science of the longevity of these molecules in the stratosphere, and we began working on things that either didn't have any chlorine in them or would come apart much quicker and would not build up and cause difficulties in the stratosphere. That replacement program was expensive. I think very successful. It remains to be seen whether 10, 20 years down the road we'll be happy with the business. I really don't know. But I certainly think I applaud what we've done. We've given the world alternatives and good ones, and we will eventually get over the problem that's up in the stratosphere, and I'm not sure that we'll even see the difference here on Earth, but the chemistry will clear up and we'll be happy again, that we'll have more natural products up there and fewer man-made. So I think our response there was strong and good and appropriate. People can think what they want to about the period it was required to really establish the science, but that is, in fact, how long it took. And once we had the results, we didn't sit around on it. The lead thing, it's really hard to know whether the social trade-offs were really that important. I'm not sure. Lead is a problem in children, but lead got in children largely through paint and not by kids eating out of the gutter. I've never been sure whether that was as important to society as some of the other things that we've dealt with. It may be. And I certainly agree that you can run cars without lead, and we're doing so now. And so that decision is made, and there's no point in agonizing over the exact measurement of the trade-offs. But there was a lot of misinformation in the public arena at the time the decision was made. And lead did do a good job, you know. It made gasoline burn very well. But once you change the engines and the fuel, optimize both, you wind up with a completely workable situation. And if in fact the environmental people that raised the distribution of lead problem as a primary concern, I don't know whether that really was or just a perceived problem. I just don't know exactly how that stuff that's spewing out of exhaust does to redistribute itself in the environment. We don't create lead in this process, we redistribute it, and that's an important thing to recognize. And it may be we're simply better off with the way where we are. It doesn't make any difference. That decision is made, and it was not a terribly difficult decision for us to get out of the business.
You've mentioned several times problems with the public arena and the media interpretations, and the idea that while to the outsider it appeared you may have been dragging your feet on the dyes, on the fluorocarbons. You in fact only took a few days because you waited for the science. Dow Chemical went through something similar when they found that the leaking mercury cells, that all the science indicated mercury underwater was fine, that there was no problem. But the moment the science showed that that was a problem, Dow took care of it and shut the plant down. So it's a matter of the science. You're working within the confines of the science that you know at the time, and you can't do much more than that.
That's exactly right. In fact, that's your responsibility. At least we always thought so. Mm-hmm. And we can do anything the public wants us to do, but our responsibility is to point out the trade-offs and the costs. That's another way of saying the same thing, so that we really do understand what we're doing to ourselves. And industry can't always decide. You know, when I say I don't know exactly what the lead problem was in the environment, I mean that. I don't know. I don't really know how kids get overdoses in a farm environment. I know how they get it in an urban environment when they're living in houses that have old paint on them. You know, I know that very well. But clearly, that the automotive decision was based on the perception that if you do this long enough, you really won't like the end result. And that may be right, but I didn't know that. I wasn't just sure of that in my own mind. And it was, it did make petroleum products burn very well. So we are constrained by the science, and sometimes that dialogue with the public is labored. It's very difficult.
Not too long ago, I saw an advertising post at the far end of the car on the commuter train I take in, and it said showed us some youngster sitting off in a corner. It said, if your child's mind isn't on history and mathematics, perhaps it's because it's on chemistry. And when I walked out, I looked at it, and it was an ad for a drug rehabilitation center.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's a problem we have.
When I saw it, I said, gee, they can't be advertising chemistry. What could it be? And then...
there you are.
It's scary when those things happen. About this time, also, the environmental situation arose in the 70s, and the... increasing government regulations. How did you respond to those?
Well, I had that full belly of that because I was with the represented upon in CMA, Chemical Manufacturers Association, during the 70s. And at the time that the toxic substances legislation came along, I was asked to sort of lead that charge for that group. with lots of help from my friends, but I sort of spearheaded it. And so I spent a year or so working with Congress trying to craft a legislation that we could live with, made some kind of sense, and did in fact deliver some benefit along with the obvious added cost. That was a real eye-opener. My favorite expression to those who want to hear it is that, you know, before I went to Washington, I was apprehensive about how the place worked, and after I found out, I was terrified. That's still true. Because a lot of decisions are not made the way that most scientists are used to approaching them. Whether you like the toxic substances bill or not, it was the best that we could do, and the industry has, in fact, learned to live with it. Some aspects of it are not very constructive, but there's no question that that all of us are concerned about materials that wind up in effluents, and we all need to be careful, to be good stewards of the earth. And the chemical industry has finally gotten out front on that, I think, and is doing a very good job. Point source emissions now are really not much of a problem, and that's a tremendous change from a couple of decades ago. And we'll get better. It's cost a lot. That's all right. That's a decision society has every right to make. Sometimes it has not delivered benefit in proportion to cost, but nobody's perfect. You know, there are a lot of things that you can fuss about, but I think my view of where we're headed is fine, very comfortable. The process by which we found direction and by which we moved in those directions is really pretty crude, and in some places has been not productive. Dumps, you know, the landfill problem and the cleanups, that's been a disaster. And not because somebody doesn't want to do it, but because of the concept of joint and several liability and the unwillingness of people to spend $100 million cleaning up a dump when their contribution was 1%. You know, that's just, but they happen to be the only deep product pockets around, so they get the job. The Superfund approach conceptually might have been all right, but it was terribly flawed in implementation. And the chemical industry tried to straighten that out, but it's still waiting for a sensible resolution. Most of the environmental laws are somewhere between okay and very good. Again, some of the implementation has been crude and not cost effective, but I don't think anybody really wants to go back to crapping up our streams and rivers, and nobody likes dirty air, and that's right. We should not let those things happen. We still have a problem with doing it intelligently and cost effectively, and I suppose we always will.
At the time of Silent Spring, the chemical industry had, I think that's where it started to get its reputation, by stonewalling the initial, their initial response to, yes, Rachel Carson. It was really a stonewalling response, which probably hurt them for a long time to come.
Yes.
What was DuPont's attitude at that time?
Well, I don't really remember much about that. We really came in a little later. We didn't have a lot of the products that were involved in the discussion. DDT was not one of ours, and I've forgotten what the others were. Partly because we did understand the chemistry of DDT and the biology of DDT, we probably weren't all that concerned, because the impact on people is de minimis. It's damn near put it on your cereal and it won't do you in. But birds are another matter. And it was very effective against malaria, mosquitoes, and things like that. So I guess if and I'm guessing now because I don't really remember that we discussed it much, but probably the technical community within DuPont recognized that there could be a problem with indiscriminate use of pesticides, but that some of these were pretty darn useful, and we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So that probably was kind of where we were. Later on, when the cancer scare got to be the center of this public concern, we played a pretty important role in trying to articulate where we thought we were as an industry and as a society. You remember the horror of the month story, this chemical, now next chemical, we had the bisachloromethyl ether. Is that right? Chloromethyl ether, one of those. And we had a half a dozen others, vinyl chloride, quite a few things. The perception was that this was the tip of the iceberg, and that when we really understood how bad chemicals were, we'd shut down the industry, or at least some people would be inclined to do that. And at that time, I was working on toxic substances, and I told a number of people in Congress, you know, you're exactly wrong. This is not the tip of the iceberg. This is the iceberg. We're at a time in history when we have learned most of what we're going to learn about toxicity of materials like this, and we know probably most, if not all, of the major bad actors right now, and we can deal with them. So be careful about coming up with rules and regulations that, you know, cause mass confusion and generate enormous costs with no commensurate benefits. Now, they didn't believe me at the time, or at least a lot of them didn't, but since 1975, there have been very few new stories of that sort, almost none. In fact, I'd be hard-pressed to come up with one. And so we went through that period when everybody was convinced that every chemical was going to do you in, that it was the primary cause of cancer, which it's not. They are not. Mm-hmm. And now I think we've settled down to the realization that we really do have a pretty good idea of what the risk is, and it's very small in terms of the whole of the total problem. Most cancers are caused by food and lifestyles and heredity and a few other things. The industrial input is some certainly less than 5%, maybe less than 1 or 2. I'm not sure what the current view is, but you know, for a while it was 60%. Mm-hmm. And everybody could prove that. It was never true. So that was a very big concern, but that's largely been put to rest now, I think, and the people are a little bit more rational. Without question, the environment has been a major burden for industry in the last 20 years. Costs and distraction, whatever. But without question, much of it is important, useful, desirable, and in any case, it's the only acceptable way to go in our populist democracy. So I think we've coped reasonably well, and I think we'll get better at it with time, and eventually we'll be glad we did.
One thing that people at Dow used to say is that being in a small town, all the executives and everybody else lived right there by the plant. I mean, they weren't far away,
right.
And it was they used that as a testimony to their safety. And
well, I think we all have a little of that feeling, and I worked in atomic plants for a couple of years. I worked in sulfuring process with carbon disulfide and all the bad actors, hydrogen sulfide, all those bad actors. And I think those of us that have worked for responsible companies think that industry did it pretty well. Very, very well, in fact. Our people were safer at work than they were anyplace else. But people still get upset when you have a misadventure, an accident, and they really wonder whether we're as diligent as we ought to be. That's what keeps us hopping.
In May of 81 was the time when Ed Jefferson became chairman and CEO. According to one source, that came as no surprise. you became president and chief operating officer, and the source says there was no obvious signal that Heckert had inside track to the presidential office.
That's interesting. I don't know why there should have been any strong signal one way or the other. I'm a little surprised at the comment because at that point in time, I don't know what people would have had in mind. Problem that existed between Jeff and me had nothing to do with either Jeff or with me. It was that we were virtually the same age. He's 3 years older than I, and a very close personal friend and a great guy and a marvelous leader. So I never had any problem with his appointment, and I really would not have felt one way or the other about my not getting it. I have to tell you, I thought I would. So I can't really deal with that comment.
Okay. At that time, from what I've read, Jefferson was to focus on research, manufacturing, general management. You were going to be concerned with marketing, pricing, and that aspect of the company.
Those are things you say to make people believe you got a plan. We both worked on everything. But yeah, we divided up in a general way, just a matter of focus. But we were partners in every sense of the word.
A quote which I think comes from you at that time, DuPont's growth rate should be 50% to 100% faster than the overall economy.
That's what the chemical industry was doing in those days. You know, we were growing about twice the GNP. And the 50 was a concession to the fact that we were becoming large and mature. Most of us really hoped it would be 100%.
Now, the other change at this point was that you felt a lot of this could be done by acquisitions. A lot of this growth would happen by acquisitions.
Yeah, there were some areas that we thought we could do well in that we probably would approach by acquisition, at least initially, toehold acquisitions if nothing else. We certainly did one.
I was going to come to that, but before that, there was New England Nuclear, I think.
Yeah, there were a few. We were trying to figure out a way to make money out of healthcare, and we did some very good things and did some excellent research, which I think in the future may eventually be recognized. But we never really made the business out of it that we'd hoped to. A sort of a sister business, agrochemicals, we did extremely well there. So those were two that we expected to, at that point in time, to expand pretty dramatically, and we did in one case, and the other we found another answer, which has turned out very well. But it's clear that DuPont per se is not going to, near term at least, be a major player in healthcare, except through the venture.
Mm-hmm. There was some consideration given to pharmaceuticals. I was surprised to see that you had looked at Merrill Richardson before Dow did.
We looked at a lot of them. We were probably a little conservative on estimating values and maybe a little cautious about some of the legal problems that appear to be associated with some products. Hard for me to look back and judge each of those. It may have been hard to say. I won't speculate. We'd had some experience with acquisitions that weren't altogether pleasant, and we had come to realize that that's hard work. When you acquire somebody, you better have a clear view of how they fit and how much pain is going to be associated with digestion, how good the end result will be, otherwise you better not touch it. So we were probably a little more conservative than we might have been, but I'm not terribly upset about the way it turned out. I think it's probably fine. I think we have a real contribution to make in agrochemicals. And not being directly involved with pharmaceuticals at this point in time doesn't give me great pain.
And that brings us to, in a very short period of time, from May of 81 when you and Jefferson took over to October of 81 with
it was shorter than that. That battle began in about 2 months.
Okay.
Behind the scenes.
Was Jefferson the driving force behind it?
Yeah, I think Jeff was probably, as he had made studies earlier on, very thoughtful analyses of how this might work to DuPont's advantage. And there was a time when we were having trouble getting raw materials, and this looked like a possible way to cure that problem. And by the time we got around to looking at Conoco, we really had concluded that we'd be able to buy on the market everything we needed, but that the oil business per se might be something that would be attractive to DuPont. So the Conoco acquisition was largely because Conoco was a good company, not so much because we were backfilling and assuring supply.